at 7:31, it's time to begin episode 69 of our space show series covering the public hearings of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. In our last, we heard the formal evidence of three witnesses advocating inclusion of astrophysics in the beyond part of President Bush's vision for the future of America's space exploration effort. This evening, the nine commissioners questioned the astrophysicists in order to further explore their views. Commissioner Neil Tyson, an astrophysicist himself, was interested in the interplay between scientific goals and what is technologically possible. He directed his questions to David Spergel, the professor of astrophysics at Princeton University.
Thank you for those testimonies. I have a question. Two of you mentioned, hinted to and mentioned directly this interplay between science and technology, or science and the frontier of engineering. And that's something that, of course, will be extremely important as we go forward with an ambitious vision. And I'm just wondering how we actually do that in practice, because, David, what you described, I think, was unusual, although we'd like to believe it's something that can happen routinely. So might you imagine, let me just invent this off the top of my head, that while we do have these decadal surveys that prioritize science, given the needs of the scientific community, as well as some projection of what is possible technologically, should the vision have sort of a technology report every 5 years, laying down where it thinks the technology is going to go so that the scientific community can see that and try to surf that into the future in ways that are most effective? And Dave, let me just put that to you. But might you recommend that or some other model?
Knowing what's possible helps drive the questions, and scientific questions help drive the technology. I think you want to have that interplay take place actually not just on kind of a five-year basis, but constantly. There are mechanisms for, I mean, among the mechanisms that work for this at the NASA level are things like these advisory councils. And I hope that the Exploration Initiative will have an ongoing FAC advisory council that will involve both scientists and engineers, people that information is constantly exchanged. And I think it's also very good to encourage, in the way the missions are constructed and the visions are developed, participation from the many different communities that can contribute. I mean, to have situations where you have teams working together that bring together people from industry teams, academia, the NASA centers. I think that kind of is a very fertile environment, and good ideas come out of that. And I think one wants to be careful, especially things so long-term like this, to avoid a really top-down vision. And that you give the opportunity for ideas to bubble up as technology advances and new ideas emerge.
William Smith, the president of the Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy. Commissioner Maria Zuber is professor of geophysics and planetary sciences at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She is very familiar with the topic, having a degree in astrophysics. In her university work, she meets many young people and has developed an interest in engaging young people in wider intellectual questions. She directed her question at Catherine Pilachowski, who is president of the American Astronomical Society.
Thanks. Well, I add my thanks to you all for being here. You represent a community that has just made spectacular discoveries and has changed our view of ourselves and how we fit into this vast universe that we live in. And thanks also for the positive outlook generally that you all gave. I appreciate that. And for talking a bit about how your work engages students and the public. I want to ask a little bit more about the science planning process and about where you think we go from here. The president has articulated a vision for NASA, which I think most of us agree that it probably needed, and the nation actually exploring space. Meanwhile, we have pretty organized communities of scientists who have been thinking a lot about science goals. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how broad that community process is, what kind of community we're talking about here, but also about, are you hearing inklings of, hey, let's get back together and start looking again at priorities to get ourselves aligned with this vision, or how can we contribute to making this happen? How can we take advantage of the great capabilities that are going to be enabled by exploring space in this new way that we're about to embark on? Can you talk a bit about how the science planning process works and how it, where it's going to go from here in your view, or where it should go?
Okay, Katie pointed at me, so I do what she tells me. Well, I have been a part of the NASA strategic planning process, and it is really a very, very important and far-reaching exercise. I believe that NASA attempts to involve the broadest segments of the community, and these issues are debated in depth over a long period of time. It is a well-developed, well-considered process. It wasn't always in place, but it has been in place long enough for us to understand that this is a very successful way of taking what are very disparate, you know, priorities and putting these together in a rational way. And so there, the process is actually in place. I think that what has happened is that the proposal and this new vision is in some sense out of sync with that, because there was a plan, there was a science strategy in place for NASA, and as my colleagues have referenced, this, you know, you look at some of the impacts of the vision, and it looks like there was some collateral damage. Now, I do not think that can't be recovered. I think the thing that must be recovered, rather than, you know, rather than to go and look at specific elements of this Explorer program or Beyond Einstein, I think the thing that must be recovered is this planning process. I believe the community needs to, I mean, obviously, this is a community that has always been bounded by the budget. We have always been bounded by political realities. So, you know, we know how to do this, and I do think that it can be successful. But we need to go another cycle. I mean, people need to understand if this is real enough, how this can factor into our planning. I think there was a question as to how these technologies might play out. What can we look to as, you know, future ways to do astronomy? And you simply have to give the process a chance to be successful.
Bob Walker came to the Commission with more than 20 years congressional experience behind him. During his time in Congress, Walker served on committees with oversight of NASA activities. In his question, he refers to one project, the Gravity Probe number B. It was a satellite designed to test Einstein's theory of relativity as it applies to gravitational fields. This technologically challenging mission had a tortuous 30-year development arc. As Walker says, it was cancelled several times, but reinstated. Gravity Probe B was eventually launched into Earth orbit and was scientifically successful in confirming Einstein's theory. This comment and question from Bob Walker was directed at Princeton University's David Spergel.
Yeah, thanks to all three of you for your testimony. It was really enlightening. And I have a question for, actually based on Professor Pilakowski's commentary that I think I really resonate with, that had to do with engaging a skeptical young people who might get involved in this, and maybe you can clarify me if I misinterpreted your words, but you were saying these people don't, you know, they're very worried about social problems and they don't understand the connection between science and what the value is to them and to society in general. Well, the first thing I would make a note of is, hey, they're taking your class, so there's, you know, there's something there, you know, to reach out to and to touch, okay, and an opportunity there. But the second part of it is, you mentioned that NASA needs to articulate what this is, okay? Now, when people say these sorts of things in my class, They get hauled into my office, and they don't leave until they're enlightened. Okay? And so, you know, I think the issue here is not to say that this is NASA's space program. This is your space program, and this is my space program, and that all of us have a role to play in this. And it shouldn't just be NASA saying what the value is. It should be you people and all your scientific societies who are providing, you know, to this common goal with NASA and the scientific community. Because if you just let NASA to its own devices, you know, you're not going to get where you want to be. You want to be a part of this. So
that's absolutely correct. It's easy for us to excite them about the ideas, about the exploration of the universe, about black holes and dark matter and dark energy. But the questions that come up in these students' minds, they acknowledge those are important visions. They acknowledge the value of the intellectual activity. But what they want to see is the connection to the lives of people on this planet. They want to be able to understand how these investments will help make the world a better place. They want to understand how it impacts the future of humankind in a dollars and cents way. And the vision to them is nice. They appreciate it. They enjoy it. They want to see it happen, but they don't want to pay for it. What they want some concrete reaction. And I think that transcends the astronomical community. I think that transcends what we cover in a basic astronomy class. I think it's a broad societal issue that we need to help the public see the economic value of where we're headed. We need to help them see the social value of where we're headed. We need to see how it helps them see how it's really directly relevant to their lives or their children's lives, and what changes this will make in society. I think those are very broad issues, and astronomers certainly have a captive audience. They take our classes because they have to. They have to take science. But at the same time, we can get them there. A huge fraction of undergraduates take astronomy. There are hundreds of thousands of students every year who come into astronomy classes. This is a good vehicle for reaching young adults, particularly young adults at universities and colleges, those who are future leaders of our society. And we can play a role, but I do think it transcends just the astronomy. It really needs a broader message.
On the space show this evening, we're at the Moon, Mars, and Beyond Commission. It's hearing in New York City. And unfortunately, I got a little bit out of sync there with my links between the audio that we've got here. That you just heard now was Catherine Pilachowski, who was the president of the American Astronomical Society. And now we come to Bob Walker's question to Mr. Spergel.
Thank you very much. I've done three of these presidential commissions in the last 3 years, and I have become increasingly frustrated by the stovepipes that we have stuffed ourselves into in terms of government programs. And my question is directed at that. What you've described to us today are extremely important parts of science that this country does, particularly the contributions to the physics community. And I've had some experience with just the kind of basic science that you're talking about. I've spent 20 years helping Gravity Probe B survive near-death experiences. This is something we should be doing. But we've got a basic science agency in this country. It's called the National Science Foundation, where the budgets are expanding significantly. Why do we assume that NASA's budget is the only place where we can do a lot of this good work? Why don't we assume that as a part of the expanding role that we think the National Science Foundation should play in basic science, that a lot of the kind of things that you want to do that I think are extremely valuable to the nation can't get done there? Sure.
Now, let me put on my hat as a cosmologist doing experiments. Look at the microwave background. So what do? We get... There are things that, where space is the best environment. Things like these, making maps of the whole sky. Then we turn to NASA, because NASA has the expertise to put things in space. And it's NASA that we rely on for when space provides a unique environment for doing these explorations. On the other hand, we're going to build an experiment in Chile that will look at the same sky, but now at much higher angular resolution, where we don't... The fact that the atmosphere's effects are important on large scales matter less. So we can do everything we need, from the ground. So there we go to NSF and rely on their support. DOE is interested in issues like dark energy, so they provide support for some of the research there. But it's what the way NSF's mission has been defined is that in such a way that when things can be done from space or must be done, there are things that must be done from space, and it's that part of the science that has become NASA's.
Yeah, and I guess that's the lack of horizontal integration that I'm concerned about. There's no reason why that artificial wall has to be there. There's no reason why NSF couldn't be funding the experiments and you still take advantage of the NASA expertise or the NASA presence in space in order to do that. I mean, these are artificial kinds of walls that we have built over a period of years that in most cases, given the nature of science, no longer make any sense. I guess my plea is to your communities is to maybe help us break down some of those walls so that basic science can be done ubiquitously within the government in a number of areas rather than simply relying upon NASA budgets, which in this case there are some advantage to having the NASA budget a little more focused to get us a little bit better outcomes.
William Smith had an additional comment on the need to coordinate scientific efforts.
If I could just follow that, I share your frustration. A lot of us in the community do over this stovepipe syndrome. And there's been a lot of attention focused on trying to look, you know, horizontally how you integrate the NASA and NSF astronomy programs. It's not easy to do. I believe there is a first step that's been put in place with the creation of an advisory committee, and I know everybody says, oh, another advisory committee. But I think this one is actually very important. It merges the advisory apparatus of both the NSF and NASA to look at this very issue. So I think, you know, people are beginning to realize that the stovepipe approach really doesn't serve science very well, and indeed it does need to be broken down.
You and I may need to go back to talk to our old colleagues at the Science Committee.
Following those comments about the need to coordinate scientific work, Catherine Pilichowski felt impelled to point out that she serves on the Congressional Science Committee.
Let me add to that as well, since I serve on this advisory committee, that I've been really extraordinarily pleased to see the engagement of both NASA and the National Science Foundation, and in fact the Department of Energy, to coming to the table. What we do is to look at specific scientific questions, directions that we need to follow, and then look to see at which agency, where the best contributions can come. In many of the programs, both NASA and NSF are involved, and they're both funding aspects in areas where they do the best work. And so it's been really an exciting process to watch those interagency collaborations develop. There's also just been a report issued by the Office of Budget and Management outlining a process, a more detailed process, for that participation in all agencies in planning these large-scale programs. I think we're seeing a lot of movement in that direction, and I'm very pleased to see it.
Moon, Mars, and Beyond Commission Chairman Pete Aldridge, with a long military career behind him, believes in setting specific goals and is forthright in expressing that belief.
Have run out of time again. One question that hit me, and Dr. Spergel, you may be the one to respond to this, is you made a comment in one of your slides about we will be able to detect an Earth-like planet by the year 2004 to 2014. That would be something that would excite the American people, I think. Why would we make it a goal to say we want to be able to detect an Earth-like planet by, much like the president has had in his vision, but put a date then so it doesn't just happen by circumstance, it happens by design, that we have a program in place that by the year 2010, it would be desirable to be able to detect an Earth-like planet around the state.
I think that's a realistic goal. We will be capable of detecting one. The danger in science, of course, is there's always surprises. Right now, we see planets like Jupiter around about a tenth of all stars. We can get to 100, probably 150 stars around us. So I would, I'd put a bet on it, but because it's the process of discovery,
Okay, I'll change my goal. I want to have the capability by the year 2010 to be able to detect an Earth-like planet around a nearby star.
I think you will. That's a real... what's already in process. If the process continues and the vision continues, it's been developed through these advisory councils.
But I'm worried that if we don't put such a date... Okay, well, let's slip this to 2012, or let's slip this to because we have this other incentive in place.
I think it would be very helpful, because I think without that, that's slip.
Astrophysicist David Spergel's cautious reply to Pete Aldridge's statement on goal setting. This exchange prompts Commissioner Neil Tyson, himself an astrophysicist, to join the conversation.
Mr. Chairman, I would add that that question, that commandment, let us... be able to detect one by that date, has the interesting, if that fails, that's also interesting science. Because if you can detect an Earth-like planet and you do not, that tells you something else about the formation of solar systems. Yeah, so that,
you agree with me.
I agree. I'm agreeing. I'm violently agreeing with you.
At this point, Aldridge saw fit to wind up the proceedings.
Again. I'd like to thank the panelists. It's been very interesting, and appreciate your comments, and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
On this evening's Space Show, we have been in New York City at the public hearing of the Moon, Mars, and Beyond Commission. The topic has been astrophysics for the beyond. What goals should the United States set for its future astrophysics and extrasolar planet search endeavors? This series of programs is researched, written, and presented by Andrew Rennie, drawing on audio recordings made available by the Commission.